We now welcome in Carter Yates of Dave Campbell's Texas Football, a UT graduate who has been covering the state of Texas. A lot of high school stuff, but you get involved in the college stuff too as well. And of anybody I could talk to, uniquely suited to talk about the Miners and the Bearcats. You got to visit with both programs over the course of the spring, and they're on Texas schedule. Carter, thanks for coming on. I know you're a UT guy, so good to bring you in, put in some burnt orange behind you to talk about some of Texas non-conference opponents.
Yeah, I saw this burnt orange background, felt right at home. I got my horns up under the table. You can't see them right now, but they're up.
I'm sure you have to fight the Mizzou grads and the Roadrunners, everybody else over at Dave Campbell. So glad we got some burnt orange representation there with the Bible of Texas football. But like I said, On3 does not have a Sam Houston site, does not have a UTEP site. We've been able to go to a lot of those guys, get people like Spencer Holbrook from Letterman Row, Eddie Radosovich from Sooner Scoop. But you were able to go and talk to not only Phil Longo and that program in Huntsville, but you got to talk to Scotty Walden out in El Paso. And we're going to start with the Miners. September 13th is when they come to DKR. And, you know, it looked like a year one for UTEP last year, 3-9. They do go 3-5 in Conference USA. Walden does bring in a lot of his Austin Peay transfers. And, you know, you would maybe want to approach a bowl in year one, but it felt like it was still pretty successful for what was going down in the Sun Bowl this past season.
Yeah, I know this sounds like loser talk, but UTEP was 15 points away from a bowl game last year. And I say that because at 3-9, there were times it looked really bleak. Like Scotty Walden's pace and space offense, they were getting bullied on the line of scrimmage. You didn't see a semblance of the offense, of what it could be. And oh, by the way, they snapped the ball every 12 seconds or less. Well, you're hanging your defense out to dry when that happens a lot, you know? So I say that because they were close. That's how close the margin of error is. And they feel really confident about the offseason they've had. And a bowl game is the expectation and the goal for the Miners team. And after visiting this spring, I'm putting their record around 6-6. Probably one of those losses will be to Texas. But I'm not here to say like UTEP's going to upset Texas, but they do feel pretty confident.
UTEP has been producing, or El Paso, I should say, has started to produce a lot more high-end talent. It's a large city. It's often forgot about within the state of Texas. You can look at Jake Fetty, committed to Arizona State from Del Valle. That's Del Valle High School, right?
Del Valle, yeah.
Yeah.
Hudson Standish at 247 calls him El Passer, Jake Fetty.
Yeah, I love that one. We won't, he'll still be playing his prep ball there. But UTEP does have a highly ranked quarterback, or a one-time highly ranked quarterback on their roster. They brought in Malachi Nelson, former five-star, started at USC, lost a battle there to be the starting quarterback to succeed Caleb Williams, transfers to Boise State, loses another quarterback battle there to Maddox Madsen, I think it was, enters a transfer portal one more time, ends up at El Paso. It's obviously great headlines for Walden's program to, no matter what has happened, have a five-star quarterback on your roster. But what are maybe some of the expectations for that offense now that they have this former high-profile recruit there in the program?
So Malachi Nelson, he's the top-rated recruit that UTEP has ever gotten. So like you mentioned, really good publicity for that program. I'm not dodging your question here, but I'm going to say that UTEP also, they pride themselves on, in the last two recruiting cycles they've had under Scotty Walden, both of which have ranked atop the Conference USA, they've signed 42 Texas high school football recruits. So you mentioned how good a football El Paso is playing. Walden wants to build this program through the Texas high school ranks. And that's kind of a change of pace from what you've seen in the past at UTEP, where it's a lot of transfer guys and JUCO guys. They're trying to build through the high school. Now, Malachi Nelson, when he first signs to UTEP, you say, this offense can be unlocked with former five-star quarterback. I know he's been to now his third school, but he had some injuries at USC, kind of fighting those things off at Boise State. You can put those aside and say, hey, the Sun Bowl Conference USA, he's going to light it up. As the spring has gone on And when I went to visit with Scotty Walden, it is an open competition. And Skylar Locklear, the incumbent quarterback, Walden said had his best spring he's seen in 4 years. Now, Locklear went from Austin Peay with Walden to UTEP. And, of course, you think that's just coach speak, right? They want to keep them both on the roster. The transfer portal comes in spring. They don't want to commit just yet. It's a very competitive room. But as you talk to people around the program, too, the deeper this goes, the less of a sure thing it is that Malachi Nelson is even the starting quarterback. Like, I right now would put Locklear as the starting quarterback.
Wow. So the headlines go so far, I guess to say, and, you know, it'll be a competition. Heck, you may see two quarterbacks there in Austin, it sounds like, whenever they do match up on September 13th. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think they ideally would like to pick one quarterback. Last year, you saw them rotate between Cade McConnell and Skylar Locklear, and I honestly think if they're flip-flopping quarterbacks, it's a bad sign. It means neither of them is gaining a rhythm or they're getting injured and the offense doesn't have a clear identity. I think UTEP's best scenario is Malachi Nelson becomes his five-star high school ranking and they have a really surprising season with a high pace and space offense. But right now, I don't know if that's happening.
You mentioned pace and space. We'll go there. We know that under UTEP, when Dana Dimmel was there, the late Dana Dimmel, very Kansas State-like. You know, you talked about going to JUCO for players and going around that you know, talent pool to add, very Kansas State-like, something he was very adept at and learned from Bill Snyder. It was a slow offense, to say the least. So what does the pace and space look like a little bit for people who may not have watched much minor football last year?
Yeah, it's basically the Kendall Briles type scheme that he ran at FAU, Arkansas, and TCU. 12 seconds or less, they snap the football. It have extremely wide splits with the wide receivers. But if you watched it last year, it didn't look that great because they got bullied on the offensive line. They brought in a lot of Austin Peay transfers, which making that jump from FCS ball to Group of Five football is huge. And Walden said that last year at this time, their average squat max as a program was 365 pounds. Like, there are Texas high schools doing more than that. They've upped that to 470 this year. So hopefully you can see the trenches hold up a little bit better. They did bring in Mark Kalla, the offensive coordinator. He was at TCU with Kendall Briles all through those stops. And I think Walden's still the primary play caller, but Kalla does bring an attitude where you can move guys around the formation. You saw what they did with Savion Williams last year at TCU, where they couldn't run the ball. They put Savion Williams at Wildcat quarterback. Well, I'm going to make a comparison, and don't roll your eyes at me just yet, I promise. Cam Thomas at UTEP, he's 5'7", he's not 6'5", but he's this minor back role that they have. It's like a hybrid wide receiver running back type deal. You can see him doing some similar things to what Savion Williams did last year. So that is kind of, in a nutshell, pace and space. 12 seconds or less on offense. They like to go fast, put pressure on the defense, super wide splits at the wide receiver, but the offensive line needs to be better this year.
You talked a little bit about the Austin Peay aspect. That's where Scotty Walden was. Not so much to players. You know, if he's a successful SCS coach, it makes sense you're going to bring those guys with you to your next stop. I'm sure there's still a good amount of those guys there. But as far as what Scotty Walden wants to implement as a program, you know, what does he look like culturally? I don't know if you know Justin Wells, guy I work with here at Inside Texas. He is one of the biggest – he may be the leader of the Scotty Walden fan club, but what are some of the things he's trying to do at UTEP, again, in a place that is a large metropolitan area, especially when you look on both sides of not only the Texas-New Mexico border, but the Texas-Mexico border. What is he trying to do to maybe bring some eyes to that program that is so often forgotten when you think about FBS football in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, when he first got to UTEP, you remember that video of him at the basketball game, like ripping his shirt off, painted chest, running around. I saw that and I was like, man, this is kind of corny. Like, that's what I thought. And it is corny if it's not consistent. But Walden, every time I've spoken to him and from everything I've heard from people that covered him, he is always like that. And what I said last year when I covered UTEP was their record wouldn't matter as much in the long run as the attitude they had while doing it. And I think you saw them winning two of their last three games in Conference USA play. Like, his culture was starting to set in. Really hyper, good attitude. And I love his attitude on the recruiting front too, because in college football, look, I've said before, college coaches have a worse work-life balance than the president of the United States. Like, it is a hard job, but a lot of times in the current state of college football, you see guys complaining and this is why we can't do this. This is why we can't bring players here. This is why our roster isn't as good because of NIL. You will never find Scotty Walden make an excuse, and he is an ambassador for El Paso. Like, he's not a – he was actually born in Cleburne and played high school football there, but he wasn't an El Paso guy, and he's tried to become an El Paso guy, which I think is why you see the excitement of the recruits and the top two recruiting classes in Conference USA in back-to-back years. He also told me that with the revenue sharing program, he actually went to athletic director and said, I need to renegotiate my contract so more money goes to the players. And the athletic director, it didn't work out. So the contract negotiations failed or succeeded, depending on how you look at it. But he did do a Walden Family Football Challenge where he basically raised $70,000 with his wife and matched the donations from the donors. So I think he's the right man for this job. I think he's got a great attitude, and I'd put myself with Justin Wells. Like, I'm a fan.
As far as the transfer portal, you know, usually UTEP's going to get hit by good players leaving. Does happen. I'm sure they had a few guys out, but they also seem to have brought in a good number of Power 5, Power 4 transfers. Looking at On3's numbers, got Orianne Fisher on the defensive line, Jalen Brown at wide receiver. They even got somebody to, like I said, cross the border from Las Cruces all the way over to El Paso, and Derek Burks and Edge. What are some of the names that Texas fans should watch for aside from Nelson or Locklear, who's at quarterback on either side of the ball?
Yeah, wide receiver, it's the Kenny Odom show. He is their clutch guy. He caught two overtime touchdowns against Kennesaw State. He's another been with Scotty Walden since Austin Peay, now at UTEP. You sense a theme here. So he knows Walden very well. He is their big-time clutch guy. Ashton Emery, the running back, he was a district MVP 2 years ago from Walden's first class at Rockwall. Very high on him after the spring. They think he can add a lot to their running back room. Derek Burns, you mentioned him from Las Cruces. He should be one of the primary edge rushers that'll try to get after the quarterback. And then let me look at they're really excited about their secondary. Xavier Smith and Lance Russell at the safety spots. Both of them long, 6 foot for Xavier Smith, 6'3" for Lance Russell. They should be really strong in the secondary, and they've got a lot more depth back there, which I think you'll see is the biggest improvement from year one to year two. Like, Walden's talking about doing his roster on the whiteboard and just stepping back and saying, like, wow, this is so different. Because last year they would have two healthy cornerbacks, have to move a safety to cornerback, linebacker to safety. It was a total mess at points last year. So they should have a lot more depth at all positions except the defensive line, that is. Defensive line is scary lack of depth, which is a G5 theme.
Exactly. If they find it, that's a place where they can find some money in the transfer portal. Makes sense. So interesting to see how they'll manage that. As far as Walden goes, you know, this is his second season, almost his third season being an FBS head coach. He had the interim stint at Southern Miss in 2020, of course, goes to Austin Peay, gets the Govs up to a good level. I'm not trying to pull him out of El Paso, obviously, but like, do you see him as being a guy on the rise, especially if he can get the Miners to a bowl game, maybe being somebody that could move further east in the Lone Star State if some other job came calling?
Yeah, I do. I see him as a rising young coach. I mean, I think he's 35 years old at this point, and you see he hires coordinators like that too. It's Bobby Daly, who was at Montana State last year as a defensive coordinator. He left his alma mater because he wanted a defensive coordinator job in the FBS. He's worked his way up from like grad assistant to director of football ops to defensive coordinator. Mark Kalla, same thing, like been with Kendall Browse as a QB coach, wants his first shot being an offensive coordinator. I do think Scotty Walden, if he can turn UTEP around, because you got to remember, like, UTEP does not have a lot of success historically as a program. It's a beautiful Sun Bowl. It's a great city. But I think this would be, if they made a bowl game this year, it'd be the sixth time in the 21st century they've made a bowl game. So it's not a lot of historic success. And I'd argue at points it's harder now to coach there at a G5 school with the two window transfer portals. So yes, I think Scotty Walden's a guy on the rise.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
We'll go a little bit different, starting to look at the Sam Houston Bearcats. Casey Keeler, the coach that led them to that spring 2021 national championship, led the Bearcats into the FBS. Some struggles in the first year, as to be expected, but he had a great second season there in Huntsville. I believe the Bearcats went 9-3, or maybe even 10-3, won their bowl game, or competing for the conference title. It's so tough to do that when you're making the jump. And he parlayed that into the Temple job, which, why would you go to Temple? He's from the Philadelphia, that little area of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware. So it's a little bit of a homecoming for him. And it's another homecoming as far as the head coach goes. Phil Longo, who was let go by Wisconsin, and Luke Fickell, lands on his feet with a head coaching job there in Huntsville. What's kind of the energy around Huntsville now? I know that they're going to be in a very, very interesting spot now. They're redoing their home stadium. They're going to have to play in downtown Houston, which is about almost 2 hours away from Huntsville. Yeah. They'll be playing at the Houston Dynamo Stadium. So that's a headwind they have to face in year one. But as far as, you know, Phil Longo getting his first shot at being a head coach in the FBS, what are some of the big things happening for the Bearcats this upcoming season?
Casey Keeler's 10-win season last year, in my opinion, is the best coaching job in the country. And I don't think Longo should be held to, like, that's the expectation this upcoming year. You mentioned they're going to be at a different stadium, the Houston Dynamo Stadium. Longo himself is a bit of a polarizing hire. He had a lot of friends with the donors and the people around the program from his time as an offensive coordinator from 2014 to 2016. And he loves Sam Houston, right? Like, he's at the Wisconsin team meals at the no phone rule, breaking it because he's watching Sam Houston games, right? Like, he vacations in Conroe, Texas, and has 20 friends that he still keeps in touch with. So he is super excited. He told me that his plan is to coach for 50 years. He's on 36. Like, if he retired as Sam Houston's head coach, he's had a good career. So that is his goal. But from a fan base perspective, it's a little polarizing because you mentioned he was let go at Wisconsin. They were like 101st in the nation in total offense. He a bit uneven at Ole Miss and North Carolina, Wisconsin. So he has those Power Four brand names, but it didn't always go swimmingly at those programs. But they were so successful when he was there from 2014 to 2016. They had the Walter Payton Award winner and Jeremiah Briscoe, the quarterback. They won two Southland Conference championships, and he is super excited to be there. So I'm bullish on the hire long-term, but this year it's going to be rough because of a lot of stuff the staff could not control. Like, for instance, Longo got there a week after the portal opened, which it's really hard. A lot of the dice is already, the dominoes have fallen when you get there. He basically recruited players with one other full-time assistant on staff. He was bringing them to the facilities with no one to introduce them to yet. So there's some stuff out of his control that's going to make it hard this year.
I know Keeler goes to Temple. That's a small step up. I mean, it is Temple, but it's also the American Athletic Conference. The defensive coordinator, I believe, went to North Texas,
which is huge.
Which is why you see a lot of people going from Huntsville to Denton. But they did bring in a Metoyer, one of the many Metoyers of the Woodlands High School. This time they bring in Mabry Metoyer, was at Wisconsin with Longo, comes back closer to home there on I-45. Quarterbacks is obviously going to be the big theme when we're looking for what to watch for from these opponents from a Texas perspective. We know Longo is an air raid guy. What type of season or what are some of the expectations maybe for Metoyer here in year one, not just for him in Huntsville, but for Longo as well?
So Metoyer is similar to Nelson too, in that it's a full competition with the incumbent. So Metoyer is that air raid guy, that laid back, that Cali long hair he's got. He seems like a perfect fit for the offense. Hunter Watson's the incumbent. He was a former JUCO player from Salina, Texas, and totally different quarterback. He's 6'3", 200, a battering ram as a runner. Was not always the most consistent passer. And you saw their offense struggle towards the end of the year because, dude, this guy's got a lot of heart. Like, he can fire the boys up by sticking his nose in the run game. But he was also on like 20 HP by the end of the season. He was so injured. He did pick it back up in his little mini air raid audition he had in the bowl game. I believe he had like 82% completion percentage, 200 something ish yards. So it's probably his best pass performance. But Longo, the air raid is a little bit misleading sometimes because, like a lot of the Mike Leach proteges, they've gone away from the "we only pass the ball" that Leach did at Texas Tech and Mississippi State. Like Longo in 2014, they actually ran for more yards, 800 more yards than they passed for. And then by 2016, they've got the Walter Payton Award winner for the best offensive player at QB. So he can kind of mold his play calling based on who starts at quarterback. So if Hunter Watson's the first quarterback out there, they're going ground and pound and throwing it around a little bit. If Metoyer's there, they're spinning that thing around the yard.
One of the other big transfers that came in, it's very interesting. Over on Inside Texas, he was a recruiting trail darling. That is Alton McCaskill, Houston, Colorado. Had a great debut season at Houston. Transfers to Colorado. I think he has a year off because of injury. Arizona State. Now he's coming back closer to home. Is this going to be the impact guy on that Bearcat offense?
So he got there after I did the magazine visit. Which is funny, when I tell you behind the curtain, when we do the magazine visits, it's like April, midway through spring ball. You feel for the G5 programs because they'll tell you about guys they have, they're banking on, and then they're gone like 2 weeks later. It's brutal. But the portal giveth, it taketh away. McCaskill comes in after I'm there. I would not say he is like going to be the impact major guy. I would say it's more going to be Elijah Green if I was a betting man, because he was at North Carolina with Longo a couple years ago, had like 500-something yards. I just don't know how healthy McCaskill is. I mean, he was awesome in that debut season with Houston, but since then, he has not gotten a lot of carries. So I could see him being a breakout star, but I don't think you'll see him from day one as like he's the number one guy.
Looking at Green, like you said, spent a few years at North Carolina. 2022 had 558 yards, was part of that really great Indiana team last year, helped them get to the playoff. So should be one to watch. And yeah, like you said, I've been able to watch when Mack Brown hired Longo. I'm like, okay, this makes a little bit of sense. You know, you're not just gonna hire your old boys again. You're gonna try something new. Didn't work out, but you know, it is what it is. He's the air raid guy with a little bit more run in him. Any defensive players to really note over there on the Bearcat side of the ball? Like I said, a lot of them followed their defensive coordinator last year for that 10-win season to Denton to play for North Texas. It's going to be tough, it feels like, on that side of the ball this year for the Bearcats.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty brutal. So Skylar Casty, the DC from last year, he got the job at 29 years old. He was a big question mark of like, they're giving it to this young hotshot DC. They were the number one defense in Conference USA last year. He parlays that into the North Texas job. He then takes everybody to North Texas with him. Sam Houston lost their top 16 tacklers from last year. The returning leader is CJ Johnson, the linebacker who had 16 tackles. I was told they went through spring ball with like three healthy scholarship defensive, no, Yeah, I think it was three healthy scholarship defensive linemen. Now they portaled in some more after that, but obviously they didn't get all the spring ball of work. And then one of those defensive linemen, Matthew Aribasala, went to another school, transferred out of the program. So Freddie Autry-Lindsay, he's the DC now. He comes from NC State, where he actually did mentor like three NFL defensive backs there. He's a very good coach. He's got experience with Longo at three different stops. It's going to be really hard to judge him based off this year because I just don't know if they have the personnel. Like, I think the offense can score 35 a game. The defense might let up 45 a game. It's going to be tough.
Just looking at the schedule, you know, they play Western Kentucky, UNLV. They have to travel to Hawaii, get a bye week, and then they play Texas. A lot of different teams. Joining the Conference USA, they have to go to Oregon State, which I know in their kind of limbo status, they're still a team that's going to have a little bit more talent. But, like, what does success look like for Phil Longo this year? Is it four wins? Like, what should they be looking for in Huntsville, especially when you factor in, like I said, the playing in downtown Houston when you're all the way up in Huntsville, yeah. When you're in year one, you're all these different factors. The portal hits you. What might success look like for Phil?
I think if they made a bowl game, it would be like, oh, like it would be insane. If they get four wins, I'd say, Longo, you did a hell of a job that first year. I'm putting my, if I had to do my over under, it's like 3.5 wins. Like it's probably 3-9. If it goes really bad and they get injured and that opening stretch of the schedule you mentioned is so brutal, like it could be 2-1 win. Like it is a full on rebuild right now, quite literally and figuratively with a new stadium coming in. But I mean, if they close the season out strong, like maybe it starts off really bleak, but then the end of the season, they get in Conference USA play, they can get a little bit of momentum for next year. They open that new stadium up. Like there's a way this works out, even if it starts off pretty low. And Texas, I'm looking at you like right here. Like it's going to be low, that game. It's going to be a low point.
Maybe a game we see some backups and backups in.
Yeah.
So should be interesting to track. Always fun to watch what's going on in the state of Texas. Maybe, I mean, you can combine both of these, both of these teams for this question, considering you cover, you know, high school football, state of Texas football, all levels. How important maybe is it for both of these teams in the state of Texas to be able to play the Longhorns in Austin instead of Texas maybe getting ULM as they have in the past, or, you know, just to throw another team out there, like something like Troy or something like that, to get these FBS teams, it's pompous, but it's true, on the platform that Texas provides. How good is it for football in the state for the Longhorns to be playing these type of teams?
I think it's huge for both programs. And for UTEP, they're going to go to the Mountain West next year. So that's a bump up in conference, and they need to have a good season and increase eyeballs. Talk about Malachi Nelson coming here, puts them on a national stage before they move to a new conference. And then Sam Houston building a new stadium, having to do a lot of work behind the scenes to get that program where it needs to be for FBS football. That's why I said Casey Keeler, that 10-win season last year, it's the best coaching job I saw, because Sam Houston basically for decades was working to go to the FBS. And then they're working to buy in, get their money up to go to this poker table that is FBS football. And then as they sat down, the ante went up and they're like, oh, by the way, there's a transfer portal and NIL with them. So they are still in a full build, and it is important to play Texas and stuff like that and get on that national stage. And I don't know if there's money involved, but if Texas throws the money for these games, like that's great too.
I think I looked it up when they played some of these bye games. It's about like $1 million or so. And I know teams like UTEP and Sam Houston aren't going to be hitting like the full $22 million on house settlements, but every dollar counts in this day and age. And as much as people can think Jimbo Fisher may have lost a little bit, there was one point he made where, like, college football is a trickle-down economy, and these teams paying these bye games, it's what a lot of these athletic departments rely on, and I'm glad it's staying in-state and glad to see it going to not just a system school, but a new school that Texas hasn't seen in a long time, not since 2006. Sam Houston stands as the last FCS team, I believe, that the Longhorns put on their schedule. Now they're not FCS, they're in the FBS. They get to play them a little bit more. So Carter, we appreciate it so much. Hey, I know magazine's coming out soon. I'm going to be checking my mailbox soon. And obviously, if people think Dave Campbell's, as you can see all behind you, all the different editions, Texas greats on that cover. If they think it's just all about high school football, they're missing a big portion of what y'all do.
Yeah, we do a full breakdown of all the FBS teams, multiple pages on them. I did the Sam Houston UTEP ones. Mike Craven, our senior writer, did all the rest of the 11 teams there. But we also go small college ball. We go from FCS to D2 to JUCO with Corey Hogue, who kills it out there, previewing like 40 some odd schools. So it's a big reference book. It'll get you ready for the season.
It's always worth looking forward to. And my favorite game is to guess who's on the cover. I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I cannot wait to see not only where y'all go from a college perspective. There's a good quarterback in Austin. Maybe you've heard of him. Maybe that's somebody that they'd like to talk about. But it's always fun to go over that and then see who y'all put on the high school perspective as well. I've had some great choices in the past few years. So, Carter, thank you so much. Appreciate it a ton. Looking forward to seeing what you put into the Bible of Texas football and then what the Bearcats and Miners are able to put on the field.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Joe. Appreciate it.